one emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike McCarr. Episode 23, Joseph Delaney's The Last Apprentice series, The Night of the Soul Stealer and the Attack of the Fiend. The story of a young man and the girl with pointy shoes and the girl with no shoes who both love him. And now, Necronomapod.
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Moving the mic.
Moving the mic ever so gently. What are our books this week? How have you been?
We've been good.
Yes. I've been a little grumpy myself.
Yes. It's an Aries energy.
Aries energy?
Aries.
That makes you grumpy?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So a little angry. Angry.
I'm not so much angry as I'm just generally cheesed.
Well, jeez. That's anger. That's low-grade anger.
It's low-grade anger.
And it's anger fondue.
Every time it snows, and it keeps snowing up here in Doppeltown, you know, it's spring.
Doppeltown sucks.
It's spring, and then it's winter. And then it's spring, and then it's winter. And I don't know. I just, you know.
It's like, in like a lion, out like another lion, in like another lion.
Oh, Lord. Help us. But it's all getting better. It's going to be much better. Even next week this time.
Unless the apocalypse gets us first.
Unless the apocalypse.
It's bound to happen. We go through 18 months of winter and then the apocalypse.
Yeah. Mike here has been reading a little too much. He's been taking the news a little too seriously. A little too seriously. I mean, granted, it was a blow to us all when Charlton Heston died and they finally got around to prying that gun.
But instead of burying him, they're making him into Soylent Green.
Oh, the jokes. You know, I walked into work this morning and I said, are you guys like me? I've been waiting for days for somebody to make a prying a gun out of my cold dead hands joke about Charlton Heston, and no one has done it.
Because they're all a bunch of dirty apes.
Yes. Damned dirty apes.
And strangely, I had watched the full-blown Planet of the Apes movie not too long ago. And
oh, yeah.
He kicked ass.
He was all right. He was okay.
You know, for what he was... He kicked ass. He was better than okay.
Yeah. I saw his very, very first film appearance within the last year. I was, for some strange, geeky, but of a different kind of geeky reason, I was watching all these old avant-garde films. And I was watching this one. It was just this little student piece that has been preserved. And there's young Charlton Heston, his very first movie role. It's like a friend of his from like theater school or something like that, had a movie camera, and he's doing this avant-garde 3-minute piece, and he's like, you know, 18, 19 years old. And pretty good.
It's funny though, the movies he's been in have been pretty prophetic. I mean, Soylent Green was all about global warming.
Yeah, and overpopulation.
Overpopulation.
And the breakdown of infrastructure.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes was the same way, yeah. And Omega Man.
In all three of those movies, major interstate bridges fall into the Mississippi River. Did you notice that? Well, they don't, but... but infrastructure does drop in all those movies. And so as much as that, we're going to cut this out.
Snip.
And we're back. It's cocktail time. So, shall we jump into our books this week? That's right, books.
Yes, they are books, and they're getting thicker and thicker.
I know. This is the first one I've actually like read, like words on the page.
It's thicker.
I've listened to them all, but it did seem kind of long.
Mm-hmm.
Good though. I saw the raised eyebrows of disagreement.
So what are our books?
Okay, our books this week are books 3 and 4 of Joseph Delaney's The Last Apprentice series, mm-hmm. also known as the Spooks Apprentice series in Britain. And books have been out in Britain for a little while, but the fourth one was just published in America, wherein Doppeltown is, about a month ago, I'd say. So book 3 is called Night of the Soul Stealer, and mm-hmm. book 4 is called Attack of the Fiend. And I happen to know that book 5 has a scheduled in stores date in August. In this book is a lot of crumbly cheese. I was remarking on all the cheese that's in this book. Lots of cheese.
There's a lot of cheese.
When I think about this book, I think of cheese.
Do you think it's yellow cheese or white cheese?
It's county cheese. I'm guessing it's sort of yellow-gray cheese.
Okay.
And crumbly, so it's probably like got clots of bluish-gray mold. Tasty.
what do we want to say about these books?
Well, I liked them quite a bit.
You did.
Though, not as much as the first two.
I have to agree.
They're still very strong books. We're going to spoil the plots of these books like crazy here. So if you don't want spoilers to ruin your experience of these books, don't listen to the rest of this podcast until you've finished.
You don't even have to say that. We said we're assuming that when you listen to this podcast, you have read the book.
Yeah. Well, we should say that every once in a while.
Snip,
snip. Ooh, and we're back.
I'm cranky today, too.
The first two books, I think I was giddy because there was so much possibility in those first two books. And in these two books,
it's like a loss of innocence.
Yeah, he's making choices. And the possibilities that were floating around in my head are, you know, some of them are gone now. But not all of them. We're 4 books into the series now, and Tom's apprenticeship is supposed to last 3 years.
Yeah, it's only been a year.
A year and, like, 3 months, maybe. Yeah, just
it's
over
a year.
Exactly a year.
Yeah, because it started in the spring, and this book ends in the spring.
Right, you're right. Well, a lot has happened, hasn't it?
And he talks a lot about, like, this has been quite a year for me.
What with all the evil I've banished. There were parts of this book, though, that was a lot more scary than I remember the first one.
Yes.
There's some harsh, harsh bits.
Yes.
I was like, wow, this is pretty gutty for young adult reading. But, you know, he waits till the books 3 and 4 to really start...
He starts to
pull some stops. And if I was a teenager reading this or younger, I was like, you know, I'd be totally into this. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm ready for this now. And he knows I'm ready for this. Like, yeah, let's break some bones. Let's cut somebody's arm off. Let's stab a priest. Let's just stab a priest
right in the chest.
Right in the chest, and just let him there, all bloody and stuff. I was like, whoa, he just killed a priest. That's, that was
a good thing. For the plot. It was a good thing for the plot.
Yeah, I thought
the choices, and it's interesting because really the fourth book is what opens, so the world opens up more. The third book, you're still within a smaller... place, you know, in a way, and a lot of things take place in this house and mm-hmm. And in the basement and in these relationships. But the fourth book opens that up, and you see there's more of this. There's an apocalyptic thing happening.
Yeah,
it's a bigger story now because it's the whole world basically.
Yeah.
It's not just Tom and his.
In the
encounters.
In the first three books, there's hints about the larger overarching story, but there's like a plot of the beginning and middle and a very definite closure, a very definite end where, you know, here's the monster and here's the battle and here we defeat it. And, you know, and we go back home and I go back to learning Latin.
And things are foreshadowed or mentioned.
Yeah, mentioned and, you know, darkly hinted at.
Kind of like mumble through your hand.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's the case with the third book. The curse of the, no, the Knight of the Soul Stealer. Who's the Soul Stealer in this one? Isn't it, what is his name now? Dang it.
Oh, it's, accessing. I want to say Marvin, but I don't think that's
it. It's some guy.
Oh,
it was one of,
no,
we should know. It's, but it's the bad guy is one of.
Wait.
Morgan. Oh, we had to dig deep for that one.
Yes.
Well, it's not so much that we forgot, is that we piled the whole second book on top of our memories of the first book.
Right. Right.
But yeah, Morgan. Morgan was the Skook's, one of his old apprentices, a failed apprentice. Thankfully, one who lived.
One who's gone bad, like some of that old farmer's cheese.
And he's become, did they call him a necromancer? Yeah.
Yeah, he's a necromancer.
A person who uses the dead.
To his own whims.
To his own purposes. And that was one of the things that that Morgan does then in the course of the story is Tom's father dies.
To me, that was probably the worst.
That was the worst. Of the two books, that was the worst thing that happens, is that he makes this departed spirit think that it is in hell, burning for sins that it didn't commit.
Yeah.
That was pretty lousy.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It was under him.
It was up there with the witch's face appearing in the big crystal ball with Dorothy making fun of her Axifrantium. It's right up there with that.
Yeah.
It's just something was like, oh,
I know, and it really,
and you felt horrible
for both of them, for both Tom and for his
Tom,
father.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. That was
kind of
that character, Morgan. I mean, we've come across some really bad characters, but I hated him.
Yeah.
You actually hated him.
Hate that character.
Yeah. Because there is nothing good in him.
No. And except that ultimately he's foolish and weak, which makes him even more despicable. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, and there's at one point that's, well, why are you doing this? And it was like, power. But to do what? Power for what?
Yeah.
Didn't matter to him.
Didn't matter. No.
But to his, not to his credit so much, but as an explanation, I mean, the Spook says later that part of that god-demon thing probably entered into him at some point.
Yeah.
And was,
he was corrupted.
Yeah, he was corrupted. Corrupted
by the magics he was using. And, so when he gets his comeuppance, it was very satisfying.
And also very gruesome.
And very gruesome. That was that whole bit.
That was that whole basement bit was.
Yeah. Well, it was like an ancient burial mound or something like that.
But it was underground.
It was underground.
Which a lot of things in this book are underground. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
The pits.
The
second book.
The labyrinth.
The bane that was underground.
Yep. Yep.
And this. The Spook has a basement.
Yeah, he keeps stuff down there.
He keeps the dead witches and
he keeps those out in the West Garden.
No, in the third book, they're in his basement.
Oh, that's right, in his other house.
Yeah,
you're right. And there's the burial mound where they find what's the creature's name is
Golgoth.
Golgoth.
That's deep underground.
Yeah.
So it's all this stuff that's happening.
Yeah, it's very archetypal that way.
Yeah.
But Morgan gets his comeuppance in just a a nasty, cruel, and so satisfying way. The spook he's trying to get, one of the major plot points is that he is trying to get this book of spells that he found from the spook, from Gregory. And Gregory has had it copied and has taken the spell that he knows is the spell that Morgan wants, and he's changed like a word or two because he knows that Gregory was a lousy student and does not know his Latin. And he's changed a word or two to reverse the effect of the spell.
Well, it doesn't reverse the spell. What it does is that he draws a
pentagram.
He draws a pentagram circle to stand in, and what's supposed to happen is the demon's supposed to appear outside the circle, but instead the demon appears inside the circle and can't escape the circle.
Yeah, and that's where Morgan is.
And Morgan is in the circle, and Morgan gets turned into like a popsicle.
Yeah, just instantly killed without even a second thought. It's just like, and I mean that's it. It's like it's so offhanded that it's almost a letdown. You wanted him to suffer more, but he doesn't. He's just like,
except the way
they just turn him off like a switch,
and then he just shatters.
Yeah,
and then when the demon eventually goes away, and there's a defrosting happening, there's all these bits and pieces, and the grimoire is soaking with blood.
Yeah.
And,
oh right. Yeah, that was good. Good stuff.
Yeah. It was. Spook makes him pick up the grimoire and take it with.
Oh, that's right.
Picked it up. Or wasn't the spook? It was Meg.
Meg makes him pick it up.
So there's the other plot point, is that called the spook secret in the British version. Yes. And really, there's all these secrets that Gregory has.
Yeah.
Had that come out, and there's all these sort of all of his mistakes come back.
Yeah,
to sort of make things worse.
Yeah, and even some mistakes that, you know, some of the things that come back at him aren't actually true, but Tom starts finding out some bits about his past, and so Tom and we as readers are prepared to believe the worst of the spook, and so Morgan at one point starts to lie, saying that the spook is his father,
right? And the spook like cheated on
and abandoned his mom and that's not true.
And the spook has a witch in the basement that he has kept there, that he was in love with. And instead of, you think he's being cruel, he's drugging her and keeping her in the basement.
Yeah.
And she's another plot point.
She's like
Marian witch.
Alamia witch. Alamia witch. Actually, he's keeping two witches.
Oh, he's keeping more than that down there.
Yeah.
There's three.
Yeah, there's three, but one is Meg, who is this witch that...
She's a good cook.
Really good cook, but he keeps her... I mean, until she gets a lucky break and, you know, gets off the drugs, he's basically keeping her like a schizophrenic on Thorazine. She is in it.
Pretty much.
She
does the Thorazine shuffle.
She does the Thorazine shuffle all over the house. She can't remember what from one day to the next. She never gets Tom's name right.
Yeah.
Oh, Billy.
Oh, Billy.
Thank you so much for the tea.
Until one day she does get his name right, and he doesn't notice it. And that was a big mistake on his part.
And she was quite the...
When she came out of her haze... She was wicked.
She was something to contend with.
But there's another witch down in the basement is Meg's sister, who is a
Margaret.
Feral. Yeah. Not Margaret. Meg and Margaret the same name? Possibly. There's a Meg's sister, who is a feral Lamia witch, who is still kind of snaky. Is she like scales and stuff like that?
Yeah, I thought of her more as like a lizardy.
Lizardy with a...
With big long nails. And...
Yeah. Kind of nasty looking and uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And
she puts a spell on pigeons and then she, so that they come to her, and then she eats just this pile of bones
messily
and feathers. and he describes her as bloated, and so she can't move very fast because she's filled with
pigeon guts. Well, that eventually resolves itself, but you know, Tom has to do a lot of fancy footwork because in both of these books he is on his own for big chunks of the time.
Yeah, because Gregory gets hurt and then he gets knocked out,
and then he's just like doing his own thing. He's off doing his own taking care of his own.
And then there's another secret, because Tom's mother, who we have already assumed,
we know she's a Lamia witch, just Lamia like witch just like well. Meg,
but a good one.
Yeah,
a Lamia witch, a well, tamed.
Yeah, well, you think so, but you find out more in the fourth book that she is probably more than that. She's some kind of immortal.
She's powerful.
Yeah, she's really powerful.
And what you also, I think what you come across in these books as well is this idea, the spook, his party line is, you know, there's all witches are bad, they all should be in the pit. There's no fudging on this. But then you see that he doesn't play that way, really.
Yeah.
And well, then when you're dealing with Tom's mom, who's also one of these, and that when you think about it, Tom is part Lamia witch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's this character, Alice, who is always surprising.
Well, she's the original girl with pointy shoes.
Yes. And she's always kind of set up to be, she's going to be a troublemaker and a liar, and perhaps she will be. But she always helps.
She always helps, but always kind of on her own terms. She fights the spook all the way.
Right. But there's nothing wrong with that. She's fighting on her own, that she's on her own terms.
No,
and it's not clear black and white. It's not clear good and evil. It's not.
She is the one. Just like in the Harry Potter books, you always identify with Harry. But Harry is really concerned that he is going to, you know, because he's has this strange affinity to Voldemort, that he might turn to the evil. That he might turn out evil. Well, we don't get inside of Alice's head at all. But watching her develop is kind of like what must be like for people who aren't Harry. Watching him develop, it's like, is he going to, which side is he going to come down on?
Right.
And the jury is very much out on Alice. She's actually my favorite character.
She's my favorite character, too.
Hands down. Yeah.
And I don't like the accent in the book that they use, the audio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's great.
Yeah, I don't think of her as talking Cockney like that.
Yeah, that's how her part's written, though.
No.
She always has that little apostrophe, isn't it so, or something like that, at the end of her speeches.
I know, but I wouldn't call that Cockney. Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I find it quite charming. But so I'll be very interested to see how she comes on. I mean, obviously, she is ultimately going to have to make a hard choice, and people are going to be really distrustful of her at some point. I mean, really distrustful. She's going to like betray them at some point.
Well, there's a lot of things. There's a things in this book. It's a lot about choices.
Mm-hmm.
People are always making, like in the fourth book, the priest used to be a spook, and then he becomes a priest again.
Yeah,
was a priest, then becomes a spook.
That's right.
And
I forgot about that. The Gregory was a priest.
Yeah. And Alice has to choose, and Tom has to make decisions between sometimes lying and sometimes
Alice has to choose between, and she has chosen between her very corrupt family, the Malkins of Pendle. The fourth book then is basically about the battle with the witch clans of this town called Pendle, who are banding together. They usually fight tooth and nail. They're banding together, and together they can summon some pretty great evil, the Fiend. She is related to these people. Those are some rough relatives to get over.
Mom has to make choices,
she chooses early on between basically living a life as an immortal and like marrying this man that she loves and raising his family.
Well, but if you remember in the story, she was also chained up to a rock, and so she was
as sort of some sort of punishment.
Yeah,
that we don't know what it was.
Don't know what it was.
Curious.
And then when Tom's dad dies, she has to choose to leave again to fight. Get a sense that she's got a bigger job to do.
Yeah,
and then Tom has to choose between this. Trusting the spook and stealing the grimoire, trying to save his dad,
giving in to the other young witch who was trying to seduce him,
Mab,
and she offers him in good faith. She never lies. Again, with the there's that streak. Remember we talked in the last
Night Watch how
evil forwards its own ends by telling the truth, and that is followed almost perfectly in the fourth book of the series here.
And it's also the same idea too that you choose.
Yeah,
you choose what side.
You choose what side. Were you going to fight for the good, for the light, or for the dark? And those are they don't talk about good and evil here. They talk about light and dark again, just like in the Luke Yanyenko book. We're practicing that.
You'll sound that'll sound better with a couple more glasses of that beverage.
Luke Yanyenko. There was that part of the book just because I started reading it so close on the heels of Night Watch that it dovetails so nicely.
It really, yeah, it does.
And I was like, wow, do we have an overarching theme here for Necronomipod? Perhaps.
Light and dark.
Light and dark.
The Gnostic theme. And even the people who you think are good, and there is good, but you know that you kind of... Yeah. There's always some hidden motive. There's always a little secret. A little something. Nobody's pure. I guess that's the...
No, yeah, nobody's...
There's no pure spirit here. There's no pure person. There's...
No, and Tom is learning that. And frankly, so is his master, Gregory the Spook, is learning to not see things in absolutes, which is very much how he's introduced in the first book. But he sees things as absolutes for the most part.
But I say the Spook's a hypocrite because he says he sees things in absolutes, but he doesn't.
He doesn't.
He kept Meg. Meg's a witch. Yeah. Meg did bad things. She should have been put in the pit.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it.
And keeping
He comes her, up with a compromise.
Yeah. And keeping her around, the reason he's not supposed to do it and the reason that the people in the local town are afraid of him is because... by doing his compromise, he's putting everybody at risk.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens.
Yes. He's the one who gets it.
Yeah, he really does.
I mean, out of everybody in the book, in the third book, he's the one who suffers the most from her.
Pretty much. Although he gets hammered by the stone chucker, which is...
She kind of beats the crap out of him, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
She drugs him.
She opens a can of spooky whoop-ass. So, should we talk about where the fourth book leaves us and what we can expect? I don't know that we're going to, when books 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 come out, if we're going to... We probably should, but we'll wait for... I'm going to wait for, 3 to come out next time. 3 books. It'll be, a good year from now.
I don't know. I think it's... Quite frankly, would like to go to back to 1.
Oh, really?
It's hard to keep track.
You know, that's not a bad idea. We will discuss that at length off air.
Well, there's a couple of things in the first book that I really liked was that, these witches are sort of taking over. It's this idea that these witches are taking over the town and there's people who aren't witches.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's these two worlds that are going on. At the same time,
and the
normals don't really get it.
Yeah, they don't understand how their proximity to this other world is affecting how they live their lives,
and behave, and then there's those secrets.
Yeah,
and then they conjure this creature
the witch clans.
Yeah, they conjure this creature. They create this creature called Tib.
Tib. Not Pib, which is a sort of a cherry flavor,
or Pip, from one of the tickets,
or Tab, which is,
but Tib is this. I picture one of those Cupid doll babies that's all bloody and
It's on the back cover here.
Oh yeah, that's where that came from. But he's this flesh eating, blood sucking. Creature,
spawn of a human and a pig. It looks like it's weird,
or a spider, a human and a spider.
Yeah, because he crawls across the ceiling.
But he is also, and he has a short-lived life. But he's really there to sort of create predict the future.
Yeah, and he makes a couple of very interesting prophecies.
And he's the one who kills the priest. He's the one who's falling out of the ceiling and sucking blood and hiding under the housemaid's skirts. And
oh, yeah. That was crazy. Yeah.
And that woman, what was her name? Wormald or Worm?
Mrs. Wormolda? Wormolda.
Yeah, yeah, she was evil.
Yeah, she's like, what's the house, the governess in Rebecca? Mrs. Mm-hmm. Danforth?
Yeah. Yeah, she was. And she also was, you know, she looked all sweet and everything on the outside. But, and that's the other thing in this book, like, nobody believes Tom.
No.
He sees these things, he knows these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't, he gets dismissed.
Yeah.
You know.
No, he's not believed by
the priest.
Well, the priest, like the people in authority, but you find out that the people in authority are frequently are compromised.
Yeah.
They either are under the influence of evil without knowing it, like the sheriff.
Yep.
Or they're just they just get taken out, like the priest. Quite suddenly, he's just dead.
Yeah, that came from out of nowhere.
It came out of nowhere, and that made it very effective.
Because you thought this was going to be an enduring character or something.
Yeah, he set up to be an enduring character. He has all this backstory. He's got this long relationship with this book, and then he's just gone.
And his body's laying there for an awfully long time.
It's still laying there at the end of the book, isn't it?
And then there's these choices, too, like because they steal Tom's mom. Leaves him this room in the house.
Yes.
That no one can enter but Tom and Alice. And the idea is that this room is a protected room.
Yes.
And there's chess in there that has sort of Tom's legacy.
His legacy, yeah.
And we're not sure what it's all in there, but these get stolen by the witches. Mm-hmm. And are going to be used for evil purposes. And Tom's brother and Tom's wife and child get kidnapped. And there's that scene where there's a knife to the baby's neck.
Oh, yeah. But even worse, and they don't talk about this much, but when they get kidnapped, Tom's brother, whose name is
Jack,
and his wife, Emily is pregnant.
Yeah.
And they're pretty sure it's a son, which is means a lot to Jack because he needs a male heir to pass his farm on to. And she loses the baby.
Oh, I didn't get that. She loses the baby.
And they don't really go back to it. They just sort of put that out there and they don't dwell on it. But Tom's involvement with the spook has cost his family very dearly.
Well, in a way, but really, this was Jack's fault. Jack made a copy of the keys.
That's right.
And Jack was not supposed to go into that room.
That's right.
And he did. And he got punished.
For shame.
For his own.
At the end of the...
Because he was greedy.
Yeah.
And prideful.
And, yeah.
And Tom didn't do that.
No.
That was his own.
Yeah.
And his mother. I mean, that was his mother's... What you're getting a sense of is that Tom is fighting his mother's battles.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, was Tom like a product of... Well, you get a sense that he's sort of... which, you know, I don't know how to take. You get the sense that... She sort of manipulated him into being.
Yes.
And...
Yes, well...
which doesn't...
He's the seventh son of a seventh son, which is the magical... those are the ones that make the good spooks.
Right.
She's... And you have a feeling that she made damn sure that she had seven sons. And that was it. I mean, she was done.
Yeah.
No more kids.
Yep.
Mission accomplished.
Snip, snip.
Yes,
snip, snip.
And she raised him, and she pushed all the kids, she and her husband, but mostly her, pushed all the kids into specific professions.
Tom could use later.
And then Tom himself, much against his father's wishes,
becomes
a spook because the rest of the family doesn't trust him.
And who does this remind you of? What character in what novel on what planet with worms and space travel does this remind you of?
Oh, Dune?
Yeah.
Really?
This reminds me of Dune.
Oh, yeah. So like Tom's mom is like Jessica, the rebellious Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, totally.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
He's the Kwisatz Haderach. Oh, I think I just broke somebody's geek meter. Sorry about that. Mine's been broken for a long time.
You really ought to go get that fixed.
They're expensive, though.
You should just buy a new one.
I should get a new one.
At Best Buy.
So
yeah, that's what that was reminding me of.
Yeah, no, it didn't occur to me, but absolutely.
Back, background manipulation happening.
Yeah. Genetic manipulation.
Because his mother has some gifts of prophecy and mm-hmm. such. Mm-hmm. I have to say, and that was, I think, the thing in these books, these last two books, especially the fourth book, that I did not like. Whenever you start inserting prophecies in,
yeah.
you get sort of set, you know, the room, the trunks. You're like, yeah. okay.
Room, the trunks.
And the mom, and the, yeah. you know, and it's sort of all.
My hope is that when you set a prophecy up like that and you sort of telegraph the end of your story, that can really suck because the story can work out exactly how you've telegraphed it, or it could become really good and clever plot point because you find out some way to sort of subvert the reader's expectations.
That's true.
But still make the prophecy true.
Right, because there is a final prophecy. Well, there is not a final prophecy,
there's a number of them.
Tom is told that there will be a girl who will
betray him
and die mm-hmm. for him.
Yes. And it's a girl who loves him. And at the end of book four, we have at least two candidates.
Well, no.
Huh?
Yeah, but really?
Yeah, you really do.
You think Mab, or whatever her name is, really loves Tom? She knew him for 1 hour.
Well, you know, she makes up her mind fast. But yeah, but she is definitely put forth as a candidate. And obviously...
Tom puts it forth.
Yeah. Well, you know. He's a sussy witch. He likes the witchy types. He likes them.
He's secretly searching for his mother.
Aren't we all?
So I thought what was cool was that, Tom in these trunks,
mm-hmm.
he pulls out these like sheets of linen,
uh-huh.
and in the linen are his mother's sisters.
Yes.
And they're
some kind of winged creatures.
They're lammy witches too.
Yeah.
And, but they're winged. They're like sphinx. They're not sphinx,
yeah.
like griffins or sphinxes or harpies or whatever.
Yeah. And they are under some compulsion to obey him.
And protect him.
And they unfold.
I thought it would make a great... It was a great visual. I could just see them sort of unfolding. And
And then there's the other three trunks, two of which have his mom's sisters, the harpies. And then the third one has his mom's journals.
And herbs and shit.
And these journals, you can tell that these are going to be parsed out very carefully because they're written in Greek, his mom's native tongue. And... Tom, he's working on the Latin right now with this book, but he's getting around to the Greek.
But Alice can read the Greek.
Alice can read Greek. So as Tom and Alice get better at reading Greek, we're going to find out more and more within these journals, which I'm sure will be very interesting.
I'm sure they will be. and you find out that this Madame Wormwood or whatever her name is, was a contemporary of Tom's mother, and they are
equally matched,
yeah. and they are, you know, out for blood for each other. And we should also mention that they resurrect the fiend, and the fiend is really Satan.
I was going to say how Lucifer. We should talk about, you know, the book kind of ends on not really a cliffhanger. He's not hanging off a cliff, but it reaches a pause. But we're clearly in the world is in big trouble right now.
Yeah, because this thing is unleashed, and the witches have power over him for 2 days.
Yeah.
And after that, it gets to do whatever it wants.
Yeah, and so those 2 days are passed at the end of the book. Those 2 days, they sort of spend, they command the fiend to basically hunt down Tom and eradicate him because of a prophecy. His continued living is apparently very dangerous to them. We don't know why, but they want him gone. And so they sick the fiend, the Satan, Beelzebub, Baal, the Lord of the Flies, on poor little Tom. Tom retreats to this room, this redoubt that his mother has set up for him, and weathers it as this thing just pounds on the roof. And
creates all sorts of sort of hallucinogenic despair for Tom to try to get him out of the room.
But he weathers it, and at the end... The fiend is now released from its bond. It's you know, binding with the witches, and it can do whatever it wants, which is probably no good.
It's unleashed into the world,
and that without a doubt will be will figure in coming books.
And you're also really made aware that the Spook is not going to make it. That the Spook, yes. That Tom is the Spook's last apprentice.
Yep. Yep.
And they talk about his waning power, his waning abilities.
He's dead as Dumbledore.
He is his dead. The father always has to die.
Yep. So the son can
spread his rise. Yep. That's right.
Yep.
And his actual father dies, and his spiritual father dies.
It won't be for a little while yet, but I think Tom's going to be on his own for at least one book.
And we don't know what Tom is capable of. We get little hints. He can smell death.
He can smell death. Did you see that bit at the very end? They it happens, and he sort of lets it go by. Delaney, the author, lets it go by, and Tom doesn't think about it again afterwards.
How he snatches the knife out of the air.
Out of the air, just by thinking about it.
Yeah.
A witch assassin is following him, and we're going to see this character again, because this character is set up to be a nemesis.
Yeah.
And the witch underestimates him and throws this knife at him to kill him.
Yeah.
And he sees it coming, and then he just stops it without touching it.
Oh, I thought he touched it.
He does something. But he's
able to, like, just snatch it out of the air.
Yeah, he's able to do something that he doesn't understand yet. And I think he's going to, like, remember it in the next book. It's like, wait a minute, how did I do that?
Yeah, lots of things are getting thrown out in this fourth book.
Yeah, this is kind of like you figure, okay, so how many books do you think there's going to be here?
10.
There could be 10. There could honestly be 10 books. I was going to say that this is, as the fourth book, you know, it's kind of like the pivot, which is like the fourth book of the Harry Potter series, which is, you know, a lot of things get laid out that, you know, in the fourth book.
Yeah, this is like the fourth book.
Yeah. But I think we're going to have...
We're only in year one.
I know. I know. Just Joseph Delaney is a busy guy. I mean, he's writing at a furious pace. And I have to say, the quality is, for the most part,
For the most part, yeah. There's a couple of those telegraphing things.
Yeah, that
you go, huh? Yeah. And then you're
setting up something. You have an idea for something 3 books down the line here, and you want to mention it now.
Yeah. But he also, and I guess in that third book is where I noticed it with that dad, the torturing of the dad. He knows how to get your skin to crawl a little bit.
Yeah.
And you don't.
Yeah,
there's enough gruesome, like there's some gore in there. And
honestly, I think he's getting better at that, because I didn't have as visceral a reaction to the first two books as I did to these third and fourth
ones. I agree.
So I am looking forward to further books.
Yeah.
I think we'll make a pact right here that we'll just do a book at a time now as they come out.
Yeah.
And they've been coming out every 5-6 months now.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty furious pace. These are not thin books.
The one thing I have to quibble about is in the audiobook, mm-hmm. Tom's mother does not have a Greek accent.
Well, see, I think that's explained by the fact that she has assimilated. She's tamed so much.
She needs to have a Greek accent.
I'm really, really, really reaching here. Yeah. So
she really needs to have a Greek accent. I don't think the actor can do one.
Probably can't, but she never once says "oppa."
There's that one scene where Tom says "Musaka" again.
Do you have to wrap everything in gray, please, Mom? This is a Pop Tart. Gaw. Anyway, do you have anything else to say about these quite delightful books?
Well, we forgot one thing to say.
Oh, what time is it?
Why, it's cocktail time!
Wait for it. Cocktail time?
Bubble. What is our cocktail, Mike?
I have the recipe, but I can't remember what the name was.
Well, I thought we were going to call it... Blood Magic Cocktail.
Blood Magic Cocktail. Blood Magic being, of course, one of the kinds of magic that the witches practices. Bone magic and blood magic. I can't honestly remember which clan practices which magic. But it was one of them. At any rate, blood magic cocktail, you called it?
Blood magic cocktail.
Because this is a young adult novel, I was going to do a non-alcoholic cocktail, you know, for the kids. It didn't sound good to me unless we added liquor.
Nothing ever really does.
So here's the recipe. In a shaker, combine
ice.
Crushed ice. It has to be crushed because otherwise it won't work.
Yeah.
Crushed ice. 2 shots of grenadine.
Yep.
2 shots of, what was it, orange juice?
Yeah, I thought it was 3 shots.
3 shots of orange juice. A shot of banana liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
And an egg white, preferably pasteurized. I am told, I have it on good authority that you can go and get egg beaters, pasteurized egg whites. Use enough, like, for 1 egg white.
Or crackleberry or something.
Something like that, yeah. Put this in a shaker with your crushed ice and just shake the hell out of it. And then
make a party game out of it.
Yeah, make a party game
out of it. Play some merengue music or something. While you're limboing.
While you're shaking the hell out of it, what you're doing is you're making that egg white get all frothy and bubbly.
Mm-hmm, like a pussy, bloody.
Exactly. And then pour that into a martini glass and garnish it with, I'm thinking like a thin slice of banana.
Or we were thinking like a chicken bone.
you can use a dried chicken bone to stir it with.
A bleached bone.
But then it would be kind of like a bone magic.
Yeah, it would be blood and bone magic.
Blood cocktail. And bone magic cocktail. But we're just going to call it a blood magic cocktail. If you want to make it a bone magic cocktail, secure yourself a chicken bone. Dried.
And let me tell you, they're tasty.
They're really tasty. And
don't let the egg white turn you off.
No, no. Especially if it's pasteurized, you're totally safe. And I myself, you know, I like playing salmonella roulette. So I have been known to make these without with just a freaking egg separated.
You got your blood magic cocktail.
They're good. They're really good. And it's great how they stay opaque because of the... Because all the bubbles are sort of mixed in with the... It's great. You'll love it.
There it is.
Enjoy it. I got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. But she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make the devil out of me.
So, there you go.
There you go.
And then, what have we decided for our book for next time?
We have very much decided our book for
we
next
have?
Time. It's going to be Twilight by Stephanie Meyer.
Oh, no. Which is also being made into a movie, by the way.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Those books are hugely popular.
Yeah.
Why? Tell us, Mike, why we are reading Stephanie Meyer's Twilight for the Forbidden Books group.
Well, if you can head back to a couple podcasts ago. Mike, I can't believe I went into the bookstore. there's a couple reasons. One, I heard about this book on a Harry Potter podcast, and they were all into it. And these are all people in their late 20s, early 30s. So
I checked. The book is for ages 12 to 17.
Yeah, there you go.
Females.
Shut up. Well, I went to a bookstore to look for this book because I heard it on the podcast about Out of the Pack. And I went into a, you know, well-established
local bookstore,
fantasy fiction bookstore kind of thing. And I asked for the book, and the woman, the bookseller, said,
"I'm looking for a book. I think it's called Twilight."
And the bookseller said to me, "Well, you can't mean that book, that horrible vampire romance novel that just makes me want to throw up." She said, and I said, "Oh no, couldn't be that book.
Certainly not."
And that's how I got led to Night Watch,
because she was thinking the third book of the Night Watch series
Twilight.
Is called
Twilight Watch.
Yeah, Twilight Watch.
So, but I was thinking it was the young girl's book who made her want to vomit.
And how did that make you feel?
it made me feel ashamed, and then I was angry.
Yes, because it had been forbidden
for me. It was a forbidden book to me.
So it was like pouring sugar on the ground to keep the ants away, wasn't it?
It was. It's like, we are a podcast of forbidden books.
And you you have just been forbad.
I was
worried. So we're gonna join hands and go down this merry path together.
And we're gonna giggle and we're gonna keep
You know what I've done? I've gone to the library and I have secured not only Twilight, which is on hold, so I'm gonna have to wait like a week or so before I can get it and listen to it. But it's two sequels.
Ooh. Are you getting the audio?
Yeah.
Oh good, so you can make me a copy.
I can listen to it. Yeah. Not that we would do that because that would be illegal.
Well, there it is. Twilight.
And then after Twilight. That, we're thinking
Stephanie
Tom
Meyer, yes.
And then we're thinking Tom Ligotti after that.
Tom Ligotti book. I'm thinking there's a book by Tom Ligotti that just got published. That's a collection of his short stories. It should be easy to find. It's called The Shadow at the Bottom of the World. Tom Ligotti, Ligotti.
And then one of our faithful listeners suggested that we perhaps throw in a movie every now and then. So maybe we'll consider that.
Yeah, we'll consider that.
I don't know if that's...
God knows we watch a lot of movies.
I don't know if it's in our mission statement or not, but he said movies that have to do with the book. So that's always hard to
That hard.
But
we could do
some of them.
We could do The Ruins. Yeah, that's in the theaters right now.
But what book does it have to do with?
The Ruins.
All right, goodbye.
And good night.
So let's put a stake in it.
And Cuff's head.
And shove some... Let's not do garlic. It's spring. Let's do leeks.
Leeks. And maybe some shallots.
Some fresh...
Fresh shallots. Yeah. Just peel them a little bit and crush them just to sort of release their essence and then jam it up its nose.
All right, then.
Boom.
Bye.
Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just make up my magic spell. Got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me.